Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week is William Maniac Mansion Mouth Miller.
You finally thought of one. That's a double alliteration.
Yeah, I've been thinking all day. Maniac Mansion Mouth Miller. That was just for you. We've also got Justin Ficarotta. Justin Fick, I guess I don't have one for you. I guess I'll just go with the default Flamin' Face Fick.
How we doing, fellas?
We're doing good. And I've also got a special this week, Mike Silverman.
Yo.
You sound so excited.
He's a man who needs no introduction. Mike, what do you do?
I make games. I made Jez Cubed, best Jez Ball related game ever.
So, Mike Silverman of Jez Cubed fame. There we go.
Good deal. So, William Miller, take it away from here.
I got it.
Hello.
Hello, is this Mick Rooney?
Yes.
Mick, this is the best damn podcast ever. You have been selected to participate in battle. Are you prepared?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So you must go to a games retailer. Now that can be Walmart, or it can be GameStop, or any of your choosing. And you must stack as many games as possible before being removed from the store. You must take a picture of your tallest stack and submit it to us in 1 hour.
Okie dokie.
Alright, good luck and Godspeed. We'll see how he does.
He did not sound excited.
He did not. Not as enthusiastic, but perhaps you will make it.
All right, well, good deal. And this is your gaming news for Friday, August 31st, 2007. Okay, on this week's show, we've got the 360 homebrew breakthrough, in-game WoW plague sparks real-world medical study, and U-Bowl at PAX 2007. All this and more on this week's Best Damn Podcast Ever.
I don't know about that battle, Blake Buck. He seemed a little, not as enthusiastic as usual.
Well, the thing I'm worried about is what is our success condition? What if a stack is not high enough?
Look, we will just deem it high enough. We decide.
Yeah, I like it because like he has to decide what is high enough and what is not himself.
All right. So anyway, this week an interesting article caught my eye. There's been a new breakthrough in the Xbox 360 homebrew scene. So there's apparently a kernel exploit that people have found, allowing you to flash the kernel and run unsigned code on your Xbox. So Xbox 360 fanboy reports, Microsoft seems to be losing the war against modders attacking their precious Xbox 360 hardware, with news hitting the internet that groups of modders have successfully downgraded the Xbox 360's kernel. So modders have been diligently working to gain access to a vulnerability kernel by flashing an E-fuse without relying on nearly impossible CPU key hacking, and it just goes into a bunch of this jargon. But this is really cool, because you can mod that Halo 3.
Now, but careful, because if you mod Halo 3...
Dude, what are you going to mod Halo 3 for? So you can't play online?
Yeah, it keeps you from signing on to live.
Right, so you if you do this hacksaw, you got to have you a backup Xbox 360, because you can't put it online anymore.
Lame.
Dumb. Mike, feel free to weigh in on any of this at any time.
I agree with lame. I think I'm going to pick lame as my answer.
Well, I thought it was cool.
All right, so we're unanimous. Xbox 360 mod is lame. Moving on.
Yes, Xbox 360 mod is lame. Look, I fail news this week. I'm sorry, guys.
You suck.
So, and hopefully less lame news, the in-game WoW plague has sparked a real-world medical study. So, boasting a population greater than most cities, Blizzard Entertainment's World of Warcraft has a 9 million-plus population. And back in 2005... I don't know if any players remember it's called Corrupted Blood, which is a disease they introduced, which people have sort of like compared to the bubonic plague. But apparently, since then, there's been a medical epidemiologist at Princeton University Medical, Nina Pfefferman, and her former student Eric Lofgren, they've been extrapolating real-world implications out of that in-game plague. They've just published the study in a medical journal, The Lancet. So in the study, Pfefferman noted that the disease was initially introduced by way of a newly implemented large group encounter known as the Zol apostrophe Gurub. It can be spread to other players through proximity contact, and as with the bubonic plague, it slowly ate away at a player's hit points until it either ran its course or said player died. Now, I liken that to real life because I noticed that my hit points deplete on a steady basis whenever I have bubonic plague. So, they were particularly interested in how the disease spread. I already read that paragraph. What the f*** am I doing? But the other thing that they were looking at when this disease busted out is how the players behaved. You know, and obviously, if you get like an in-game disease spread by contact in a massive multiplayer online game, it's like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, instead of quarantining, players are like running up to each other, giving each other diseases. Auction houses were, you know, like instantly racked with the disease. So it's just funny that someone's been studying this for 2 years.
Dude, that's bullshit.
Like, at Princeton
this dude
University
is just like,
medical.
Oh, look, I'm studying World of Warcraft so I can get on into BBC. Hey. This is bullshit. This reeks of bullshit from a mile away. It's not the bubonic plague I'm smelling. That's a load of bullshit.
How do you get funding for research like this? I mean, it seems like
the grant proposal.
It's pretty obvious what's going to happen. It's obvious how the disease is going to be spread. You could probably just calculate that. And it's obvious that people are going to just, you know, have fun with it because it's a game. I could have told you that. There, it saved you $2 million.
Princeton, give me the $2 million next time.
Right. Give me that money.
I want to see the first World of Warcraft STD where you transmit it by doing, like, the pelvic thrust emote next to somebody. You do that and their hit points start steadily decreasing.
That would be the end of life in that game.
Second Life has the best. I mean, you go up to somebody, hey, you want to do a fun dance together? Yes. And then you get raped. That's the ultimate disease. Passive raping.
So the other day, right, this probably happened about last week, I guess. I get a call from my dad, right? My dad's like, you know, we're chatting it up. And he's like, hey, have you ever heard of this thing called Second Life? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there was probably a situation in my father's, like, raising me, where I asked him something really dumb, and he just didn't tell me the answer, and I had to figure it out for myself. So I said, you know, Dad, it's pretty cool. You should go check it out.
What have you even done?
I don't know.
This is a bigger mistake than Justin telling Lucas that contact was good.
You gotta go to your next family reunion, and your dad's gonna be dressed up as Tails.
Oh, Dad, why?
He's going to be dressed up as Amy Rose, the pink hedgehog.
Oh. I remember Second Life beat World of Warcraft to the punch here. Like, they had the first, you know, STD spreading disease. Remember that gray goo that was spreading over Second Life way back in the day?
See, Second Life is like Mississippi. It's first in everything you don't want to be first in. I mean, Mississippi's got the fattest people, the highest rate of teen pregnancy, crime. Look,
and f***ing heritage. Did you say heritage? Because I think you did.
and heritage. It's not hate.
That's
it's
right.
Heritage.
That's right, boy. I'm going to lynch you for talking like that. All right, so moving on. U-Bowl at PAX 2007. So for those of you who don't know, PAX is the Penny Arcade Expo, which would really be PAE. I don't know why they were decided to go extreme with the X there.
Dude, Expo starts with X at all times.
But
X3 2007.
But those of you who don't know what Penny Arcade is, it's a webcomic where these two guys essentially make fun of games and current gaming news. And it's fairly fun. They've been around for a good number of years now, have certainly established themselves in the gaming industry. I mean, they've got their own expo, so certainly they've got enough prestige in the gaming industry. So the two guys that run Penny Arcade are Jerry Holkins and Mike Krull. I don't know how to say his last name. I'm sorry. The duo announced that they have a very special guest at the very end of their expo this year. You know, they had a whole bunch of guests and QA come on. And then, of course, at the end, they have the super secret guest. So this was originally going to be Jack Thompson, but he was unwilling to show. And I think he had some litigation in Florida to attend to. So instead, they got none other than the widely widely reviled game-to-film adaptation specialist, U-Bowl. Or excuse me, Uwe Boll.
Uwe.
So we've talked about Uwe before on this show. He directed, he directed Blood Rain, Alone in the Dark. What was that other one? You know, the one that Sega did.
House of the Dead.
That had actual game footage in the movie. Is that the one?
Yeah, oof. I think so.
Oof. Yeah, that was it.
That's bad.
So he's... To be fair to Uwe Boll, I have never seen any of his films. I've only heard that they're terrible. I've never seen them personally. So, though the filmmaker's presence initially stunned the crowd, who were extremely jovial in spirits following the aforementioned Penny Arcade Q&A where they talked to a bunch of developers, many quickly regained their senses and made a massed exodus in protest. So I guess he showed up on the stage and like half the audience left.
Wow.
So they first showed a preview of his new film, Postal, which for those who don't know, Postal is a very politically insensitive game where you run around and shoot terrorists and shoot up people on the streets. It's all in kind of a satirical way, but it's very violent and very comically insensitive, I guess you could say. So in the Postal movie, they have it begins inside the cockpit of the fated aircraft destined for the World Trade Center center on September 11th. After patting themselves on the back for a job well done, two terrorists get into a heated debate regarding the exact number of virgins promised to them in the afterlife, at which point they call up Osama bin Laden, who kindly informs them that the number is 20. Case closed. God. So... I certainly think that's funny. I don't know about... Maybe the rest of you haven't moved on yet. I think that's funny. So, then they cut to a few other scenes. One's at the DMV where a guy's shooting people up. So, he says that he hopes that the film... He went on to talk afterwards. He hopes that the film will help bring the taboo of referencing 9/11, as well as promote healing on the subject through humor. And he also feels that he put a lot more effort into this script than films prior. So, my first question to you guys is, do you think a film that parodies September 11th is too soon at this point in time?
Look, it's 20 years. It's 20 years, right? That's when it's not too soon anymore, according to South Park.
Oh, that's it? 20 years is the exact number?
So, we should call up Osama bin Laden and ask him, how many years?
20.
Well, let's see. What would have happened about 20 years ago today that we could judge this by? What happened in 87? Oh, Challenger explosion. Is that funny yet? We're laughing. I think so.
Oh, no.
All right, that's it. 20 years. That's... We just determined.
See, all you have to do is just get the footage of the Challenger exploding, and then after it explodes, you just put the number, like, 100. 100 points.
What?
There you go.
What are you talking about?
Dude, have you not played Mario where you kill something and a little 100 pops up and it gives you 100 points?
When you kill something in what?
You don't kill stuff in
Mario. Dude, you play the Mario, son.
Dude, Mario.
You don't blow up stuff in Mario. You just hop on it. I mean, I guess if there were a giant, like, robotic Mario to jump on the spacecraft, that might work.
Dude, have you played Super Mario World? You blow up the towers, the end of every
world. Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh.
They sink into the ground. I mean, how many Koopas have to die?
Dude, that's terrorism waiting to happen. You know what? I'm convinced that Super Mario World blowing up all them towers, that caused 9/11.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the quote of the show.
It's training people to blow up buildings.
So I personally don't think there's any time too soon to make a joke. But then again, I'm a gigantic asshole at the same time. So I'm probably not the best person to ask about being sensitive. People's feelings. So he goes on to say, after he talked a little bit about his film, he went on to say to take some questions from the crowd, which essentially boiled down to, why do you suck? So I don't.
Well, yeah, what was his
what
response?
Does he think is going to happen?
Like, he's honestly, just trying to get his face all over the internet and all over, you know, the media, trying to promote this film, because I would imagine a film like this is very difficult to promote. Were you going to show that trailer on national TV with the terrorists flying into the buildings?
Yeah, but you get the press. You get everybody making an uproar. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's the perfect way. You just show it on TV.
It sounds like he's doing fine as is.
Yeah, it says here that on his first movies he's done, he referenced House of the Dead. He said that the movie cost $7 million to make, but made $80 million worldwide. So certainly, I mean, you can turn a profit making these terrible movies.
No doubt. People watch them.
Here's the thing. Like, everyone likes to rip on Uwe Boll. And, like, I read this article, and people were telling, like, you know, call him a piece of shit, get the fuck off a stage, and they're like, you know, catcalling him, and it's just like, you know, this man Uwe Boll, he is my hero.
I know, man. He's got the biggest balls of any director of all
time.
You
heard it here first. You know what? I haven't seen his movies. I probably won't like his movies, but he is my hero just because he stood in front of all those people and just said, "Hey, f*** you, go see my movie." It's like he's enjoying every second of
he
this.
He beat the
like,
shit out of Lotax in his like, own film.
What do you say? Yeah. It's like, what do you say to someone who beats the shit out of five of his critics and puts it in his movie? Like, that scene will be in Postal. Like, I think that's awesome.
Personally, I can't wait for this film. I may not like it, but I still like Uwe Boll. In fact, I've heard that he loves publicity. I think we should call him up on his show and be like, or on our show and be like, "Look, Uwe, our podcast is listened to by literally hundreds of billions of people. Hundreds of billions. You've got to come on our show." We just put together a big
media kit. We should get Uwe Boll on here.
I think he would come on our show.
Wait, didn't we have a lead with that, or was that a Tom Barbalay
lead? We did have a lead through Australian Gamer, but those guys over at Australian Gamer, they didn't have. We kept trying to contact them, and they never really got back with us. So that kind of that lead fell through. But look, I bet it's not that hard to find him. Because he loves going... I mean, he's been on a lot of podcasts. He's been on... He did that interview on, like... I think it was on Wired. Maybe not Wired, but it was another big site that reviewed his movie. So, I think there's a shot. We should... Uwe, if you're listening, you've got a free seat.
And you know what? If BDPE were to make a movie, I think I probably want Uwe Boll directing and writing the script. Like, just make a biography of the three of us and make it an Uwe Boll movie.
Hell, he can play William Miller if he wants to. I'll even let me play my part.
Dude, he can play all of our parts. He is every character in this movie.
You know what else this article has me convinced of is that we here at the BDPE, we need our own expo.
We do. The best damn
expo ever.
It'll
just be the Heat
ever.
Expo. H-E-X.
BDX. There we go. Yeah, how did they get that? I mean, I know a lot of people read Penny Arcade, but an expo, man.
Penny Arcade is huge. I mean, Penny Arcade does, like, I remember the World of Warcraft strategy guide. They had all their, they did all custom art for the strategy guides. They're on, ESRB did an advertising game through Penny Arcade. They get around a lot more than you think. They don't just do comics. They do art for a lot of different organizations just because they're so well recognized, their specific style. So... we're just going to start selling ourselves out on the street. If you'd like to enter into business deals with us, it's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com or call our listener line, 845-BATTLE-9. Now, when you call this number, you're going to hear some music. Disregard that and leave your message about giving us money.
And one day it will happen. One day people will stand in front of them doors and they'll open up on a Tuesday morning at the BDX. And they'll just be, instead of the EA booth, just have a face.jpg, like 20 foot by 30 foot. just hanging in the
face.
Air.
Face.jpg lookalike contest.
Look, William Miller needs to write a book about how to get in the game industry.
How to.
Yeah, it'd be like one page.
Look,
long.
I was going to say how to suck Miss Sid Meier's c- and I stopped myself, William Miller. I stopped myself.
Good.
you're training me. Maybe tonight I can sleep on the carpet.
Dude, are you at his house this week? Are you watching the Meyer household?
I am actually at work right now, but they have extended my stay, so.
Look, I'm gonna try and come up there this weekend, taking my C-17 Globemaster 3 and flying it into the Meyer house.
was that a 9/11 joke? No. Was it going into the Meyer house?
Oh, no.
It's too soon, Vic. God, it's too soon. Now it's time for releases.
Oh, no.
14 more years.
All right, so let's see. We've got Monster Hunter Freedom 2 for PSP, release date August 28th, 2007. Monster Hunter Freedom 2 builds a Monster Hunter 2 for the PlayStation 2 and contains 50% more content than the original Monster Hunter Freedom. Wow.
It's double the game. That's why it says 2 on it.
Wow, okay, we also
Oh, look,
have...
next one is Wild Arms 5. Does it have 5 times as much content?
Look, it better. It better. We got Wild Arms 5 for PS2 coming out August 28th. If any of you guys are familiar with the Wild Arms series, it's an older RPG franchise. Been around since PlayStation times. William Miller
has played
this.
Is it any good? I always hear things about it.
It's all right. I think the most distinguishing characteristic about the Wild Arms that I play, I guess it was Wild Arms 3. Maybe or no, actually, I think it was the first Wild Arms. Was the opening theme music was very good. It was this acoustic guitar thing. It was pretty nice. It had this anime sequence at play.
Can you sing it for us, William Miller?
No.
I think William Miller was just entranced by the dancing anime weeboo boo nonsense.
Probably. So Sony Entertainment is celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Wild Arms RPG. The fifth game in the series, Wild Arms: The Fifth Vanguard. It's 5 times the game. We've also got Stuntman
Ignition.
Notice
how that's spelled. It's the VTH Vanguard.
Right. We've also got Stuntman Ignition for Xbox 360 and PS2, release date August 28th. The Stuntman series continues in the next-gen version.
Now, let me stop and tell you something about Stuntman 2. I tried this on Xbox 360, and I was a big fan of Stuntman 1 because it's kind of like Burnout. Drive fast and things explode around you, and then it plays it back and you look cool. Except this game was real hard when I was playing on 360. Maybe I just suck. Maybe I've lost my stuntman skills. But other than that, it looked pretty cool.
Look, I saw the trailer for this game on TV, and it looked
hot.
Oh,
on the TV.
On the
dude,
on
I hadn't
TV.
Watched TV in years. I don't know what's happening in current event. Are the miners dead yet? Good God, I hope so.
Too soon.
Too soon. Has it been 20 weeks yet?
Oh. Awful. That's awful.
Fit, go.
All right, so moving on, we have Tiger Woods PGA Tour 08 for Xbox 360, Wii, PS3, PS2, PSP, DS. Tiger Woods swings his way into the 2008 season. Now listen, Tiger Woods ain't that good anymore. I've been seeing on the TV, I've been seeing them golf leaderboards. I don't see no Tiger Woods on it. It's some Korean dude now. I don't know how long Tiger Woods' contract is, but I don't know, man. It's like Mike Tyson punch out after a Vandy Holyfield kicked his ass. Oh, no, Buster Douglas. You remember that?
I love that name, Buster. Like, that's perfect boxer name.
That's the best. That's almost as good as Blake Bust. You know, sometimes I forget what my own name is and I call myself Truck Buck. That was a lie. That's never happened.
not the forgetting your name part, but the calling yourself Truck Buck part.
Yeah, the best part about it is that Buster Douglas boxing lasted exactly like 2 weeks, because then Evander Holyfield knocked him out like in the next bout, which was the next month, and then Buster Douglas boxing for Sega Genesis was done. That was it.
Wow. All right, what else we got?
We also have Guild Wars Eye of the North for PC, August 28th. Guild Wars Eye of the North will acquire at least one of the previous campaigns to play and include new dungeons, skills, heroes, armor sets, and more. Yay.
Guild Wars Eye of the North. This is the dumbest named expansion pack ever. Does anybody even play Guild Wars?
Isn't that the one that doesn't charge a subscription?
Some people are crazy over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So that's good.
A portion of it is free. If you want like the full meal deal, you still got to pay for it. They have a paid version now, but you can still play
free
for free.
Good.
So is this like Sauron's Eye of the North? Like I want to make Fic Wars Rectum of the East. the last boss is my rectum.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
No, seriously, it'd be awesome. Picture that Sauron's little tower there from Two Towers. Only instead of his eyeball, it's my ass.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Fink. It's Goetze up there.
And then Uwe Ball can fly a plane into it. Oh, coming up next, we have Warhawk for PS3, August 28th. It's a multiplayer PS3 shooter centered on aerial combat, ground vehicle assaults, and infantry offensives. Is this game any good? Does anyone know?
This game was supposed to come out. It was going to be like single player and multiplayer. It was going to be the whole package. And then like apparently half of their dev team said "fuck you" to the other half and like quit or got fired or something. So now there is no more single player at all in this game. That is called Management Nightmare, in case you're wondering. The single player is just like, you know, multiplayer with bots. That's the main complaint I've heard about this game. But it hadn't been reviewed yet, so we'll see how it turns out.
What do you got to do to make that, like, half of your team get pissed off with the other half of your team?
Man, I don't know. Somebody fucking ran that.
Yeah, like in William Miller Game Studio, half the people are gonna wear red, half of them gonna wear blue.
And then they fight every day.
And I'm only gonna feed one of them.
Yeah, only half the team gets lunch break.
No, see, you just like you go 9 months into your project, you just throw everybody in the Thunderdome, and whatever team comes out, that's the team you have to make the other half of the game.
Yeah. Mike, you know how we have the Fun Zone at Firaxis? Our studio is going to have Thunderdome.
Sure.
It's going to be caged
with
weapons.
So Firaxis has the Fun Zone.
Yeah.
What pray tell is in the Fun Zone?
It's fun stuff.
Like I'm picturing like the floor is like maybe 2 feet of those little colored balls that you jump into.
it's like a McDonald's playground for big people.
Yeah, it's got like the tubes, and it's got like programmers crawling around the tubes.
I'm having fun, y'all.
The swings are great.
Thanks, Sid.
Yeah, none of that. It's gonna be a battle.
All right, speaking of battle, Blue Dragon coming out for the Xbox 360, coming out on August 28, 2007. Blue Dragon is a role-playing game from the developers of Chrono Trigger. I question that. Oh, really? That same team is intact after 10 years? Huh, imagine that. In which a young adventurer battles evil within their blue shadow monsters. I played the demo of this. I was not impressed, but then again, I have the attention span of a gnat.
I've been hearing about this game for a long time. Like I hear Japanese people going crazy about this. Is it released in Japan yet?
It came out in Japan, I believe, last December. It's been out there a while.
Okay, because, you know, we got a lot of media coming in from Japan, and we're just now getting it over here. It's like the good old days when we had to wait.
Yeah, we had to wait for our Japanese RPGs.
Man, I remember that Chrono Trigger tape. I must have bought that tape for like $85 when it came out. And this was back when Walmart, like, got that tape a month after it was released or more. And, of course, in Mississippi, they didn't know what video game tape was, so it was a miracle.
I remember
when I got that.
I used to shop at Toys R Us. You had to pull these little, like, leaflets out of the sleeve and take it over to, like, the game section manager or whatever.
Yeah. Dude, you remember the Nickelodeon game show where you got, like, a Toys R Us speed run?
Oh, I remember that.
Like, all the dumb kids would go to, like, the Super Soaker aisle and just get a bunch of Super Soakers.
All the Super Soakers.
All you need to do is just go to that video game aisle and take all them little cards.
You see, they should have done it like they do in Supermarket Sweep and just gone to the meat and put all the meat. All right, we've also got Medieval 2 Total War Kingdoms, the album coming out on August 28th for the PC. Medieval Total War Kingdoms is an expansion of Medieval 2 Total War and features 3 brand new campaigns and 13 new playable factions. Wow, that sounds like a pretty substantial upgrade.
I don't know.
That's a lot of factions.
Total War, lots of dudes.
It's a popular franchise. I've never gotten into it, but supposedly it's very good. So if you're into... Look, I decided the other day, it occurred to me that I have another game to add to fighting games. Fighting games is on my list of games that I hate and I'm never going to play again, even though I keep buying them. RTS is being added to that list. Because I just buy them, I get frustrated, and I don't play them anymore. I'm looking at you, Homeworld, Company of Heroes, StarCraft, Warcraft. I don't even play any of them. So I'm done with those. Like, oh, wait. Damn. Oh, wait a minute. Damn. Except for Command & Conquer 3. Because it's got f***ing... What's his name in it?
Kane.
No, what's his name?
No, it's got the dude from
Lando.
Starship Trooper, son.
Oh, yeah, it's got him, but mainly Lando, son. Lando.
Oh, Lando.
Billy D. Williams. That's his name. Billy D. Williams.
I did not know that.
Anyway, it's... Also, Naruto.
No,
Ultimate
no,
Ninja...
no.
Oh, I did. No. I thought he was just doing
Metroid. Okay, first of all, it's pronounced Naruto, okay?
Oh, whoa.
And secondly, he's the man who's going to become Hokage, all right? So just deal with it. Okay? I'm sorry, but...
Now, can I ask you... Let me ask you a question about Naruto. I have a friend who likes this, and you know how they say in the show, believe it, that's like his catchphrase.
He says a Japanese thing, and they translated it to that.
What does he say in Japanese instead of believe it?
He says, he suffixes every sentence with K-by-O.
K-by-O? That's what he says?
Yeah. He just said, it's not even as big a deal. And they should have just cut it out in the U.S. version, because it doesn't make sense. In the Japanese version, it makes sense because it's just sort of like a quirky speech pattern. But in the US version, because whenever they dub an anime, they have to be dumb. So that's what they decided to do. Be dumb.
Do you hear this? Do you hear that sound? That's the sound of your penis shrinking.
It's already damn near infinite size, so it's not really a big deal.
Good save. Good save. So what is this game?
So the other thing is, Naruto Ultimate Ninja Heroes, PSP. Naruto Ultimate Ninja Heroes is a fighting game and features single and multiplayer team-based fighting. So as much as I love Naruto, I hate Naruto-related games, usually because they are not very good. I don't know about this one.
They never live up to the show.
They just can't, you know? How can you pack that show into a game? You know, well, I wish somebody would figure out a way to, but maybe this is it.
You know, I think it's just the opposite of that. I think, like, the show is so dumb, the game can't be as dumb as the show. So people that like the show just, you know, reject it out of hand because it's not as dumb as the show is.
Well, what do we call it? Dumb, good? I want them to put that into the game. So I want that game to be dumber then. I don't care. I just want the anime to be in the game. That's it.
Look, you dumb. What's next?
You dumb. What next?
All right, Metroid Prime 3 Corruption for the Wii. Metroid Prime 3 marks the debut of Nintendo's action-adventure series Metroid on the Wii console. Now, here's the thing with this one. They should make it as hard as the original Metroid. That's my requirement. There you go. Right
now,
there.
I think your requirement is going to be satisfied. There's rumors going around that they're making a 2D throwback Metroid for the DS. It's going to be more like the retro.
See, that,
you know,
that
like
better
retro
happen,
style.
I miss me some 2D Metroids. Like 2D Metroid is packed up and left, and now I'm sleeping with Castlevania instead.
Exactly. Look,
I'm having an affair on Metroid.
And just think about how nuts people went when Contra came out on the DS, or when it was announced. I mean, come on now, with that dual screen. I mean, geez, that'd be awesome. But I hear the preliminary reviews for Metroid Prime 3 Corruption are pretty good. People like it. So
okay, well, I'm a little worried about it because I seen the trailers. I went and downloaded the Wii trailers for it. And there's a lot of talking. There's a lot of dialogue in the trailer.
Oh, Lord.
Dialogue bad.
Dialogue
bad.
Story bad. Story bad.
Good.
Grapple arm good.
Bomb good.
Who's she going to talk to? Like, the thing about Metroid, like, the thing about the original Metroids was this feeling of isolation you got when you played it. Like, can you remember the first 20 minutes of Super Metroid? Like, you're in that you're in the
oh,
world.
Oh, yeah, that's probably some of the best atmosphere I've ever seen in a game.
And, like, once you start introducing all these characters and all this crap, you just lose that feeling of isolation that Metroid was so great
and
for.
Also, not only that, but why is every game we play now, Metroid is particularly bad with this, why do I gotta have a fucking robot helper friend telling me everything to do?
Because we
be it
dumb,
a computer,
that's why.
Be it Cortana, be it, you know, why do video games gotta give me a helper at all times?
Doesn't that new Castlevania tape do that? Didn't one of the new DS Castlevania tapes have a helper?
Yeah, I think it does.
Dude, the DS Castlevania is awesome because you play as two dudes at once. So you have the dude with the sword, you have the chick with the magic.
All right, Justin Fick, I want to get one of them Castlevania tapes. Which one should I get?
Both.
Okay. None.
What's this? William Miller playing a video game? Have the heavens split?
You shut up. Look, this Heroes of Mana. This Heroes of Mana has opened the floodgates. I'm gonna buy two games now.
Look, you're gonna try and play Castlevania, and you're gonna be like, you know, when you get in a coma and you try and get up afterwards, and your legs don't even move. That's what your thumbs are gonna be like.
Look, man,
they don't even remember how to play.
So William Miller tried to.
You have to go to therapy.
William Miller tried to play Smash Brothers today. They finally got me to play Smash Brothers right, and they got me to play Halo. Look, William Miller beat Mike's ass in Halo the other night.
Oh, right. Please.
I'm just gonna, I had twice the number of kills.
I am
anyway.
Very, very sorry for your skills, Mike.
Anyway.
I just wanted to lull him into a false sense of security.
That's right. So, William Miller played played that game today, and I'm completely inept, helpless even, playing a video game right now. Like, I can't do it. I can't jump. I can't move. Like, I feel like an old
person.
See,
you're like the polar opposite of Justin Fick. See, like, I mean, I'll play a game on Xbox Live, and I'm like, oh, I got a pretty good score. And then I look at Justin Fick's score over Xbox. It's like 100 times mine. See, Justin Fick is on the extreme awesome end. I'm in the middle, and William Miller's on the, oh, my God, I suck titties in.
Dude, the best story I've heard about that is Bruce Morrison of Free Verse fame. His newlywed wife, Alana, is playing Hexic on X-Blah. And one day, Bruce Morrison pulls me aside and says, you know, Alana's trying to beat your Hexic score. She's been trying for like the last couple of months to beat your Hexic score. But the thing is, I don't remember playing Hexic. I think I played it once. I think I played it once because it came free on my Xbox.
See, Justin Fick just has a times 10 multiplier to any score he gets by default.
So, I mean, there are scores that I don't remember posting. It's like, okay, I'll play this game once and put it down, that people have been playing for months to beat.
That's how you roll, son.
All right, well, now it's time for the judgment. All right, now, guys, I'm looking here. There's no judgment here, but I thought of something we could do. And if Justin Fick, didn't you buy Space Giraffe?
I did buy Space Giraffe.
You and me want to do like a tag team review of Space Giraffe?
All right, let's do it.
All right, well,
wait,
I guess I'll start it off.
Okay,
so.
First, what the f*** is Space Giraffe?
That's a good question.
That's part of the fun. That's part of the fun, baby. Here, I'll set this up. So Space Giraffe is a game that came out on Xbox Live Arcade last week, and it's $5, and it's pretty much the most f***ing insane game I have seen. And it, I mean, maybe Pachymono.
No, this is worse than Pachymono.
For those of you who don't remember Pachymono, this is a game made with the Unity game engine for last year's OMG competition, or maybe 2 years ago, I don't remember. And it involved, like, you were this naked guy, and you had to run through the city and jump in front of this family's photograph. And the more naked body you got in the photograph, the higher your score. Crazy game.
But yes, crazy space, game. Space Giraffe is crazier than pictures of dick.
A bold statement.
So, in Space Giraffe is, at first, Space Giraffe is pretty much a Tempest clone. For those of you who don't know, Tempest is, I guess, it's a classic arcade game from the 80s where you were a... They would have like a shape, right, like a tube or a box, or maybe just like kind of a curve, and you would slide along the outside of it and shoot at enemies as they kind of came up the tube or curve or whatever. And if they got to the outside, they would slowly come towards you, and if they touched you, you died. And obviously the enemies got more and more advanced and harder to dodge and that kind of thing, and that was the basic gist of Tempest. So this game's the same sort of concept, but they've applied a lot of extra layers on top of it, which I'm sure, Fick, you kind of understand these dynamics a little bit better than me, right?
Yeah, I'm one of those people that's sort of in, like, it's not quite Tempest boat. Like, it uses the same play field as Tempest, but along with shooting dudes, the kind of the way you get points is you need to build up, by shooting dudes, you build up your power zone. And then once you build up your power zone, the enemies that get on the
power
edge,
cone?
Power zone. It's like,
now, the power zone...
It's like the fun zone, only without the little colored balls in it.
Well, the
power zone is
essentially
the length
of the level.
It's fun
zone without
the
tubes.
It's essentially the length of the level. So you know how in Tempest the level was a set length? If you're not shooting dudes, the level suddenly gets shorter and shorter and shorter, making it harder and harder to hit the enemies. And if you don't have any power zone, enemies on the edge of the screen will kill you in one hit. Whereas if you do have the power zone, you can ram them with your ship, and they fly off and generate bonus multipliers.
And the bonus multiplier you can tell you get because the ox, you hear the ox bellow.
Oh, yeah.
That's what lets you know. All right, so basically that move is kind of like the main move you have to master in Space Giraffe. There's like bonus pods you can get, which will let you, kind of like a smart bomb. It powers up your power zone and lets you ram guys off. And you know it's actually a really cool dynamic. It goes on for 100 levels. And the scoring system is actually cool. I can get to it later. I can get into more detail. But yeah, there's other things like there's certain enemies, like there's flowers that grow, and you shoot the flowers, and it sort of builds up your power zone. And it's just like it's a totally different way to play than Tempest. Like Tempest, you basically blast everything, and if you blast everything in Space Giraffe, you can beat the levels, but you don't really get the good scores.
Right. The key dynamic is not killing certain enemies until you get to the best time to kill them.
Yeah, it's like sort of the best way to do it is to, you know, is to keep your power zone high enough and let the dudes come to the edge, and then at the exact moment where they're all grouped together on the edge, you hit the pod and ram all off and get, like, you know, get the mega multiplier, which is a lot of ox all at once.
So I'm gonna go on and talk about the style of this game. Okay, from a visual standpoint and audio standpoint, this game is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the Tempest... Okay, everything in this game, every single thing is flashing in every single color of the rainbow. So, like, the grid you're going along is flashing rainbow colors. The enemies are flashing rainbow colors. The background is like a tube of flashing rainbow colors you're going through. And then they have, like, shapes that appear in the background for each level. So sometimes it's like... Maybe a logo or a word or something or some sort of shape, and at one point it's even the most terrifying. There's a level called the Eyes of Allard, and it's Jay Allard's face in the background staring at you. Jay Allard is, for those who don't know, is the he's PR and director of XBLA, I believe, and Microsoft, right?
No, he was a big Xbox guy for a while, and I think they put him on the Zune, and I haven't heard anything from him since then.
So, it's very ridiculous, intense shooter action. Fake, do you have anything to add? Do you got any cons or anything?
Cons, like, the only con I could think of is that it's a little hard to see what the hell is going on sometimes, just because there's so much stuff going on, like the style of it is a lot like, you know, like the iTunes visualizer. If you put on the music and sort of like all those colors that sort of melt in your face. that's like everything in this game. But basically the guy that made it, Jeff Minter, I guess he's the guy behind the Xbox 360 visualizer. So, but yeah, like the background is a lot like that, and then everything in the game, like the HUD, the, you know, like the score readouts and everything, like the enemies, they're all adding to this visualizer-esque.
Yeah, like the score is this like kind of melting, flaming, glowing sort of number.
So wait, is there actually a space giraffe in this?
I don't know. I mean, like, they say your ship is supposed to be a giraffe. It doesn't look like a giraffe to me.
This is a space giraffe. This is very tangential, but space giraffe makes me think of Space Michael.
Are you referring to Michael Jackson's Moonwalker?
Oh.
Well, I'm referring to Michael Jackson as he appeared in Space Channel 5.
Oh, sure.
Oh, that's right.
Ooh.
That's right.
One and two.
Even remember. More heavily featured in two. He has several lines of dialogue in two. There's a whole Michael Jackson level in Space Channel 5, too.
You gotta rescue him. You gotta rescue Space Michael.
You don't rescue Space Michael. Space Michael does the rescue. He has to rescue all little children and send them away on beams of light. I've played Moonwalker. I know how that works. I know how children are abducted.
When you rescue Space Michael, he sounds exactly like this. Thank you, ooh la la.
I remember in Moonwalker, right? In Moonwalker, I think it was the last level or the second to last level, it was Michael's battle plane. Remember that? You were on Michael's battle plane.
Dude, I f***ing live on Michael's battle plane. Michael Jackson's up there with Uwe Boll in my mind. You cannot... He is so far beyond to compare... You can't criticize Michael Jackson ever. So to wrap this up, $5 for Space Giraffe, not a bad deal. I would say my main con is that I'm never gonna fucking beat Justin Fick's score ever.
Well, the thing about Space Giraffe's score, which is actually really cool, I don't think I've seen this done before, is that it has a cumulative score like per level. And you can go back and improve each level, and your total score, which goes to the leaderboard, is the total of your levels. So, say if I play through 5 levels and I get, like, say, 5 million points, I can go back to level 3 and, like, get, you know, and see if I only got, like, 100,000 points in that level, I can play it again, get a couple million, and then that propagates through my score as I play. So it's very cool that you can increase your score as much or as little as you want at once. Like, you don't have to play through all 100 levels. You can play through 5 levels, right. Work on your score, play 5 levels later. It's very cool like that. I like the way the score works.
A persistent scoring system.
I'm sorry, I just spaced out there for a minute.
Or were you thinking about Space Michael? Because he was thinking about Michael's you. Battle plan.
You were lost in his eyes.
I was lost. Yeah, I was lost.
That's
in
how
his
he
eyes.
Gets them.
All right, now it's time for the jank.
Well, first of all, before we go to jank, Space Giraffe, thumb direction. I say thumbs up. Thumbs way up.
I say thumbs up too. It's obviously not for everybody. You should definitely try the demo beforehand. Some people are gonna look at this game and go, "What the f-? You would pay money for this game?" And I would not say you're wrong, but it's not for everybody. But I like it. Thumbs up. All right, now it's time for the jank.
Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, we have no jank. Anybody got a jank?
I got no jank. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your point spending extravaganza?
I've been going a little nuts lately. I've been essentially, I'm like, are there any games here I even moderately like? Because I'm going to buy them. So I went back and bought, like, Prince of Persia, you know, and I might buy that pinball game later tonight. Let's see, do we have a real jank, though? Let me think. We could just say Space Giraffe, $5. There's a jank in and of itself.
It's cheaper than an LSD trip and same effect.
All right, well, now it's time for the discussion. All right, so William Miller, what is our discussion this week?
Oh, no. Hang on a minute.
That's right, wake up. Stop looking at photos of Michael Jackson. You got to talk now.
Okay, our discussion this week is game reviews. Why do they all suck?
If you think about it, video games are one of the hardest mediums to evaluate on a numeric scale. They combine a variety of different senses and experience that appeals to many different tastes.
I think Mike would argue with you about that, but...
Wait, about what? Being able to rank games on a numeric scale?
Being able to evaluate games on a numeric scale.
Oh, what, do you want me to say some nerd stuff about complexity theory or something?
I was trying to entice it out of you, but I couldn't.
Nerd. Values and radii.
What would you give? What would you give Naruto on a 1 to 10 scale?
10,000.
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's a point I want to make. Naruto, obviously, it comes from a shit anime and a shit series of games. But maybe, just maybe, this one is better than all the other ones.
Yeah.
Even so, it will never get a good score, just because of the past series. People have bad experiences with the original games or don't like the anime. No Naruto game will ever get, I think, over an 8 or on any game site ever. Even if it's great.
That could be true. Although I really do like to believe. I mean, you know, well, yeah, that could be true.
You like to believe it?
You make a good point. I mean, I'd like to believe that if they managed to make the true glory of Naruto into a game, that it would be recognized. But, you know, I don't know.
Let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. Do you own a forehead protector?
No, I do not.
Okay. Just checking, because...
I don't need to protect my forehead, okay?
Because I see kids walking around my campus all the time with them little Naruto forehead protectors.
Yeah. Good God.
And, I don't know. I don't know what they like wandered out of Comic-Con or something.
Comic-Con East. So, even the prices of game vary much greater than other mediums, if you think about it. Movies, if you go see a movie, what, 7 to... 10 to maybe 12 bucks, depending on where you live. Books, 20 bucks each usually, maybe a little less. TV shows are free. DVDs are usually the same price, but games have a much wider price range for their medium.
Now, let's explore for a second why that is. This is kind of tangential, but, you know, like, a game costs a lot of money to make, but not as much as a movie does.
Yes.
So why is a game more expensive than a movie?
Well, theoretically, the game doesn't sell as many tickets as a movie theater would. I mean, think about Transformers. How many millions of people saw that movie?
I don't know. How many?
I would bet a lot. I don't track
more than
lots
three.
Of millions. That. That's the official number. Lots of millions.
But I mean,
all right.
And I mean, even at, you know, they're going to be making a profit. I mean, I bet that movie on the, you know, they always have, like, opening weekend, and, you know, blockbusters will do, like, $100 million in the first opening weekend. As, you know, that more than pays for the film, or at least most of the time, I'm sure.
Well, here's a good example. Here's a good example. House of the Dead cost $7 million to make and made $80 million worldwide. So $80 million minus $7 million is what, $73 million? If you got a $50 tape That's a million and a half. That's 1.5 million tapes you got to sell. Not a whole lot of games sell a million and a half tapes.
That's true.
Uwe Boll put $7 million into this machine, and then $70 million came out. It is a times 100 multiplier, and that movie sucked ass. So think about a big movie.
True. Okay, moving on.
Moving on. It's perhaps because of this difficulty in rating games that websites have collectively shifted to an unusual scale. Most game sites rarely, even if ever, give a game a score below a 50% of their maximum point value. Anything below 5 is usually considered absolute shit, regardless of the score. So even if you have a 4.5, that's only a tiny, tiny bit better than a 1.0. Then we move on from there. 60% of their maximum isn't a bad game, but barely passable. 70% is average, 80 is good, and 90 and above is great. So it's like half of our scale never even gets used. We're on a 10-point scale, and most of the time we're only using 5 points.
It seems like the bar sort of gets set lower. I mean, when you're talking about film reviews, for the most part, films that... You can't put out a film that crashes, for example. I mean, you can't... It's sort of... It will be a finished film that got into the theaters. Maybe it totally sucks, but it's a completed work. I mean, with video games, right. You can get... I mean, have you heard of some of these terrible video games are like somebody didn't even finish it. I mean, so I think that you kind of lose the bottom of the scale to that kind of area.
Well, that may be true, but I mean, it seems like we would have such a wider range of reviews. Like, what if an average game was a 5? We could have such a greater amount of numeric values to assign games. I mean, we're losing half of our scale. And the only reason websites do this is what everybody else does.
And then I think a lot of these sites too, they want to play it safe, so they're just like, okay, everything is like between 70 and 90, because they just don't really give a shit.
Right.
It's just like, okay, it's just like book reviews in middle school saying that you give the book a B+. It's like, you know, it's like okay, it's all right. I read it. Didn't really love it. Whatever. B+.
So reviewers are also highly critical of sequels, constantly comparing its similarities and differences to the original game. For instance, it's very unusual to see a sequel score higher than the original, even if the sequel is clearly offers more features. For games that become a long-running series, it can often be impossible for the game to score as high as the original, even if it exceeds the original in every way. An example of this is one updated review of Dance Dance Revolution Universe. Now, obviously, Dance Dance Revolution Universe, they're not going to reinvent the wheel here. You just do the standard thing. New songs, a couple new modes, add a couple of different features in there, maybe some multiplayer, and you did it. Good game, right? Mm. What did they give it? 3.0 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Turn off the lights. The party's over. That's what the review said.
And it's
only because... Had Dance Dance Revolution, had that been the first game to ever come out of DDR, they probably would have given it a 9 or a 10. But because it's from a series that has become derivative, they just shit all over it.
Now see, here's the thing. Specifically DDR Universe, I heard, is actually one of the better home DDR games, if not the best.
I certainly think so. I play it all the time, and I think it's a fine DDR game. I mean, you may not like DDR, but for a DDR game, it's not bad. 3 out of 10, come on. Come on! Another example of this would be Mario Party 8. Again, Mario Party games are getting highly derivative at this point. And it got a little better, 6.5 on GameSpot. But the main problems they cited were it's so much like the originals. Which it's, you know, Mario Party 8 may be the best Mario Party game ever made, but at the same time, because it's so derivative of its original games, it gets shit on in the scores.
Film has the same problem. I mean, usually sequels are not given as good reviews as the original. I mean, lots of times sequels are pretty bad, though. But I mean, there's some parallel for that in terms of the film industry.
Think about this. Halo 2, when it came out, if you look at Halo 2, it is better in every single way. Every single way you can think of to Halo 1. Yet unanimously across the board, it got slightly lower scores than the original. Why is that?
Yeah.
And the other thing too is that it is getting lower scores because there was one before it. Like if Halo 2 was called, I don't know, 2 Rock, I don't know, like a totally different game, a totally original game, it would get a much higher score because it was not called Halo 2.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, reviewers often hit hard on, you know, they take off points for sequels, even if they're, I mean, if you made Halo 2, there is no way they could have made that game better. You know, in my book, other than the story being a little weak, that game is leaps and bounds beyond the original. It should get a perfect score. It's the perfect sequel, but, you know, of course, reviewers see it differently. There's also the issue of groupthink, where reviews of highly anticipated games are usually scored unanimously. For instance, an instance I have seen just this week of this is BioShock. BioShock, I shit you not, on GameRankings.com, my favorite game, they just compile game reviews from big sites. BioShock is ranked number 2 of all time. Are you f***ing shitting me?
What's number 1?
The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I'll have you know, it's 6 ranks above Mario 64. What the f***?
Yeah, come on now.
It's like 3 ranks above Counter-Strike. Come on. Like, I mean, I think a lot of sites are worried that if they... Obviously, it's not a bad game, but they see everybody else giving it high scores. If they give it a lower score, perhaps they fear a loss in readership, and maybe that's a valid fear. What do you guys think?
I think it's possible, but I think also the inverse is also true. Like I'm thinking of when Twilight Princess came out, GameStop went ahead and gave it an 8.8, and nerd rage on the internet was uncontainable.
Exactly. 8.8 is not even a low score, but because there's so much hype build up behind these games, there's an expectation from the gaming populace.
Now, and I'm saying it's also possible that this was done to, you know, specifically to get readers to the site, because they're like, oh my god, these assholes gave Zelda an 8.8, what the fuck are they thinking, let's go read this bullshit review.
Maybe so. It could have the opposite effect. So, Fick, what do you think about all this heat?
I got a couple of thoughts on it. Like the first beef I have is that, you know, like these scales, they're never consistent. Take for example a category that's constantly evolving is the graphics category, and it's like, how do you rate the graphics of these games, compare them to games that have vastly, you know, different styles? So take for instance Cave Story. For those of you who don't know, Cave Story is a Mac and PC game. That's, you know, it's they're actually working on some ports for handhelds, but it evokes this old NES style with the graphics. They're old sprite-based, tile-mapped, bitmap graphics, and it's awesome. It's perfect. It does exactly what it needs to do. The graphics have personality, they have character, and they're memorable. So how do you compare that against something like BioShock or Gears of War that have super, you know, mega realistic graphics and mega bump mapping on armor and I can see the ripples in this guy's chop. But it's like, how can you compare those two graphics? Like, if I were reviewing Cave Story, I'd give Cave Story a perfect score because everything in that game does exactly what it needs to do. But now say if Gears of War were to come out and it had PS2 style graphics, it would get the shit kicked out of it. But it's still like vastly complex compared to something like Cave Story. So, and then also like something that I actually looked up before the show, Inside Mad Games gave Kill Monty, my game dear to my heart, an 8 out of 10 in graphics. They gave Prey an 8 out of 10 in graphics. So, you know, it's like where you know, how do you compare these two things? Like it's impossible. It's like grading a movie based on its graphics. It's like there's a point where it's like, you know what, all these graphics, they're perfectly stylized to what they want to do. Do they do it or not? Same thing with music. It's like the music in Cave Story is actually some of the most memorable music I've ever heard. You know, in a very long time, since like my NES SNES game. It's like it evokes those days. It brings nostalgia. And it's like I that is more memorable to me than the full blown orchestral scored and, you know, like released for separate purchase soundtracks of games, you know, like Halo. You know, it's like I have the Halo soundtrack on CD, and it's like it's not really that memorable. There's like one or two songs in Halo that I can really remember, and this one because Blake Buck sung it with his mouth last episode. So I mean, you know, it's like again, it's like you're trying to compare apples and oranges with these two vastly different styles of games. And then also something that I do want to bring up is that there's a lot of loyalty flying around in the journalism industry. We're not like movie critics. We don't have video game critics that are just out there criticizing games. They're all, you know, writers and reviewers for major sites and shows, and they're all, you know, they all end up being funded by, you know, advertisements for game companies and games and, you know, developers, publishers, and even like the big three like Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. Money is all coming from those companies.
I've had a theory about the games industry for a long time that I think the gaming review industry or just the gaming journalism industry, I think, is highly susceptible to advertising dollars in both how they score games and their coverage of games. And I've been suspicious of this for a while. I mean, I can't prove it, but the game industry is run by a bunch of clowns, and clowns are susceptible to free money from big publishers.
There you have it right there.
So William Miller is going to weigh in here, and feel free to throw on that intellectual alarm. The academic alarm. There we go. Feel free to fire that one off. Justin Fick touched on like graphics, and I think that score should be thrown out entirely, and games should be judged on aesthetics. Now, we gotta sort of agree on what that means. So my idea of aesthetics is the ability to manipulate a viewer, or, you know, a player in this case, the ability to manipulate their preconceived ideas that they have attached to certain senses, certain combinations of sensory input. So, for instance, when I see Cave Story, I immediately sort of go back into that, you know, the images in Cave Story, the music in Cave Story evoke this nostalgic feeling, and it does that very effectively. Because it uses that aesthetic very effectively, I would rate that aesthetic very high. Now, if you were going for a really realistic aesthetic and you didn't pull that off, I would rank it very low. So aesthetics is, that's the aesthetics really, I mean, it means the study of the senses. So we all have these impressions, you know, pixel art equals nostalgia, for instance. That's an impression. And if the game designer can manipulate those impressions effectively, then I would score the game high aesthetically. And I like free money also, and I'm easily swayed. If you pay me, I will rank your game a 10 aesthetically.
So, Fick, what do you think we should do?
All right, so first of all, I think we should do away with that numerical scale you're talking about. I think it's stupid. You know, it's like 1 to 5 stars works fine. It works fine for books and movies and restaurants. And you know what? So does thumbs up and thumbs down. That's all I need. Like, this isn't a test. This isn't the SATs. It's like, if you give me a star or a thumb rating, that doesn't water down your opinion of the game. Like say if a reader gives a game thumbs down, I know he doesn't like it. If he gives it one or two stars, I know he doesn't like it. If he gives it 3 stars, I know it's eh. But if he gives a game 70%, that doesn't tell me shit.
That's true. Like, yeah, if a game gets 7, you don't really know if you like it or not.
Yeah, because really it comes down to, do I buy it or do I not buy it?
Right.
Buy or not buy. So that's it. Buy it or not buy it. Thumbs up or thumbs down.
And then also it's very different depending on what type of game. So say like a no-name indie game gets on GameStop or GameSpot and gets a 70%. That's probably some pretty good exposure. It didn't do too bad. But if Halo 3 gets a 70%, well, you know, that's like infinitely damning.
Right. Xbox Live Arcade games always across the board score much lower than their larger brothers, you know, the full games on the 360. I don't think I've ever seen an Xbox Live Arcade game score higher than like an 8.8 on GameSpot, even though there's probably a dozen games that have scored 9s, a dozen real games, you know, I say real, I guess full games that score higher than that. So I think, you know, sites should review them on the same level and not have this tiered system.
Yeah, and that's kind of sad too, because I mean, I spend most of my playtime playing XBLA games and Earth Defense Force. That's it. That's all I play. I don't know what the new Pac-Man got, Pac-Man CE, but like I love that game to death. Like that game is brilliant. Like the score on it is brilliant. It's like I would play that for the rest of my life and try to improve my score. Like once I'm done getting all them weapons in Earth Defense Force, I'm done. You know, once I beat BioShock, I'm done.
Just think you'd have to be Billy Mitchell, the Pac-Man King. Have you guys seen that documentary King of Kong?
I have not. I heard it's pretty good though.
Oh, it's fantastic. I loved it. I watched it with a couple of my friends who don't know anything about games, and they were absolutely soaked up. I mean, it plays up the drama. It's very effective, even if you don't know anything about games. So, King of Kong, either go see it in the theaters or maybe steal it off the internet. Oh, my God!
Too soon! Don't do that.
Wait, let me play my stealing song. Yar-har, fiddle-dee-dee.
So it's like, and it's, well, actually, I'd like to know Billy Mitchell's Pac-Man Championship Edition score. That's like my new Xbox penis is my Pac-Man score.
Pac-Man is such a pure game because, like, you need no instructions when you're playing Pac-Man. Who am I? Oh, I'm a eating man. Oh, look, I already ate those dots. I guess I need to eat all the dots. Oh, ghosts. Those can't be good. Oh, they turn blue and sad. I guess I eat them now. That's the whole f***ing game.
Yeah, that's what Pac-Man genius boils down to, is eat.
You have such an understanding of food-related games. See, butter.
I think...
Eat it up.
I think no matter what game I ever make, I want to make the universal enemy ghosts. Because everyone understands ghosts.
You know what else everybody understands?
Universal evil.
Everybody understands Itagaki. Itagaki Street is another one of those fundamental games.
Dude, I had an idea. I had an idea for another television show, Blake Buck. I was running down and getting some food before podcast, and I happened upon the television. They had that show Cash Cab, where people get in a cab and the lights go off and they have to answer trivia in the cab ride.
Oh, I love that show.
We should come I haven't up. Seen that, but
we okay, should I'm we should have Itagaki Cab.
Uh oh, what happens there?
Itagaki asks you trivia questions and then he gives you money.
It's not what I would have predicted.
No. Itagaki Cab, instead of the lights going off, just all the lights go out to black.
No. It's a little bit closer to what I predicted.
Oh, all right. So, anything to wrap this up? Game reviews?
Yeah, just wrapping up reviews. Like, I'd rather read, like, instead of these big, long 5-page reviews, just give me a paragraph each from 10 different guys. Give them each a thumbs up, thumbs down, and then say, like, out of that, like, say 9 out of 10 liked it, that's 4.5 stars. You're done.
Now, I disagree. I really like reading Roger Ebert. I like reading Slate.com for my video, or for my movie reviews. Like, really well thought out sort of essays on why you think stuff is good or bad.
Yeah, I don't think length is.
Now, see, here's the problem though. Here's the problem with that. Well thought out essays.
You're right. That could never happen in this industry.
Look. Well articulated opinions are good things.
We ain't getting those either.
I think that one of the issues is that the intellectuals scoff at the games, and I think that's actually bad in terms of, you know, some intellectual review is actually kind of a good thing. So we got to get them to wake
right
up.
Right. Like I said, like I've said this before, the games journalism as sort of a form of writing and critique and analysis is just deplorable. There are no heroes of games journalism. There are no like scholars of games journalism like there are in music and
besides
television
us
and film. Besides us, and I think we're not going to really be considered a true art form until we get that.
Well, all right, so that's why game reviews suck. Maybe if it gets a little better, the gaming reviewing industry can send us an email at feedback@bestinpodcastever.com. And now it's time for the battle response.
Hello.
Mick Rooney, this is the best damn podcast ever. Have you completed your challenge?
I have to tell you something about the retail business in Wisconsin.
Proceed.
Alright, you called me at around 9:10 Central Time. Pretty much every retail store in Wisconsin closes at around 9 Central Time. So, okay, bear with me.
Did you break into a store?
No, I didn't break into a store. I got kind of close. But wait.
See, that would have been achievement unlocked right there.
Achievement unlocked.
Like we win battle. Right
there. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so I left my house and drove to the Game Crazy, which is about 5 minutes away, and it was locked. So I decided to leave, and I was driving up the street, and I decided to stop at Culver's and grab some ice cream to try to bribe other stores with, and possibly do the thing the guy last week was supposed to do and get a free game on top of my stacking. However,
wow.
However, first of all, I had to drive like another 15 minutes to get to the closest GameStop. I got there, it was completely closed. There weren't even people there for me to bribe. And that's when I got the idea to go around back and stack GameStop's garbage.
Okay.
So, I go around back, and GameStop doesn't have any garbage cans.
Oh.
So, I have to drive another 5 minutes to get to the EB Games down the street. I pull into the EB Games, and I pull it behind it, and it's right in front of the mall. So I pull it behind it, open their garbage can, and it's completely empty. I think it was garbage day or something, but there was a bunch of shit on the ground. So I started stacking that, and this was like the 3-month-old the puddle garbage that you see around all the trash cans behind stores.
Oh my god.
So I'm stacking that. And I find an EB Games car topper, so I stick that on a pile, prove it was an EB Games, and I took pictures of that.
Wow.
And I'm currently
we'll have to see said photos.
Delicious kind of chocolatey wonderfulness that is.
Well, sir. Well, while that doesn't complete battle, I don't know. You did stack garbage for the best damn podcast ever. I'd say that's
I think we need to see the photos first, and then we'll be able to know.
Okay.
For sure.
Alrighty, I'll get them up in a few minutes. I have to send them to my computer from my phone.
All right. Well, we'll be looking for them, and they'll certainly go on the website. You, sir, have done very, very well. Thank you.
I think
now before you leave, I think we should have maybe it should really be a third condition. There's win, lose, and maybe an honorable mention.
Yeah, okay, I can go with that. We can whip up some honorable mention thing. Because I mean, look, battle is very hard. There's no shame in you know almost.
So having a win loss valiant effort.
Yes.
Up
so
the Friday Night Lights. I got to the 5-yard line and fell over.
Look, it's okay. You still get to bang the prom queen. Don't worry. All right, Mick Rooney, who's your favorite podcast?
Best damn podcast ever.
There we go. All right, we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot, Mick.
Good. All right, well, we'll get those photos later.
He was
later,
so
I guess.
Sad. He was sad.
I know,
he was sad when we called, and he was sad when we called back.
We ruined his whole night.
Oh, man. Yeah, I felt like he's going to commit seppuku or something. Like he's about to kill himself right now for failing.
As he should.
Yeah, if you fail battle, you have to commit seppuku.
By stuffing a frisbee in your mouth.
All right, now it's time for feedback.
All right, so Chris R. writes, hey guys, just wanted...
Now, I got to say, this is a link email alert. Maybe, Lucas, you can come up with a sound effect whenever we get a link email.
Just writing because it occurred to me that I've never heard you guys mention Pirate Baby's Cabana Battle Street Fight 2006. wait, why did you have any question about putting this in? Despite it being something I'm sure you guys and the BDP listeners could appreciate, watch the video. It'll rock your face. So we've got the little link there.
It's that video. I guess you just go to Google Video and search for Pirate Baby's Cabana Battle Street Fight 2006. So I don't know. Check it out.
All right, and we've got one from Mark G, a.k.a. Princess Peach. Yet another link email alert. Why am I even reading this? Blake, why did you put this in here? This dumb.
We only have We've only got like two other emails.
You dumb.
This whole week.
All right. Lucas writes, "Hey y'all, I got a couple of suggestions. One, William Miller proposed the creation of a douchebag alarm. That being done, I propose the creation of a William Miller academic analysis alarm. to be played before each of his monologues. I'll just make it a big loud snore. That's good. I like that." So you can just tune out when you hear the snore. So two, rather than trying to reuse failed battle challenges or ideas that wouldn't quite fit in the hour time limit, I suggest a new form of heat. Best damn podcast ever side quests. For every challenge that isn't met or can't be used, post them on a special section of the website, a.k.a. the forum, because William Miller is never, ever going to update website ever. There, they will be open challenges to anyone who dares take them. The first person to submit photographic evidence of the completion of the challenge will get a credit for it, and it will be taken off the list. It will also be a way of redeeming those who fail battle the first time. BDPE, Emerald Weapon, go.
I like that. What do you guys think?
I like that idea, too.
I like the Emerald Weapon reference. That's really good, Lucas. Good idea.
The redemption challenges. In fact, maybe the listeners could come. I tell you what. The listeners should come up with the redemption challenges, and then we will okay them as we see fit. So we'll make a forum on the thread, or if there's not one already there, go ahead and make it, because I'm kind of lazy. And give us your redemption battle ideas. And when it gets approved, first man to do it, they get an accolade on the forum, perhaps.
Okay, and we've the last one from Wazoo. Okay, look, we got a little story for Wazoo after this. So, guys, sorry for the late pick. I was following him all day before I could. What is this all about?
This is he attached an image. I don't have it here because DreamHost was down earlier when I was trying to upload, but essentially it was a photo of Redline one car in front of the other. And it said, "Stop right there, Dietrich," with an arrow pointing to one of the cars.
God. That's pretty good.
If you look at your album art, you'll see
okay,
it.
Okay, so here's what happened. So we're pre-showing. We're heating it up before the show, and I get a little ping from Wazoo saying, "I can't." Well, at first he asked me, "Am I doing battle tonight?" And I said, "I don't know. Look, you don't ask if you're going to do battle tonight." That's fault number one.
That's a head start.
Number two.
To use William Miller's.
So then he says, "I want to go to movies with my friends, and you can't battle me tonight." Look, that's like begging for mercy, and we don't take too kindly to begging for mercy. So look, I tell you know, Wazoo, it's like being sick and getting skipped out of your test at school. You got to take it next week, and it's going to be twice as hard. So. You just be ready.
Well, you know what? That was before we started the show. That movie is probably over.
That's true. Look, Wazoo, we were like this close from calling your parents. So you just remember that next time you try to skip out on battle.
Hello, is this Wazoo's parents? We are internet people. Let us talk to your child.
We met him on the web in the chat room.
Yeah, they hear just like four people laughing on the phone. Four grown men giggling.
Yes, bring us your child.
We're at the stump, but every time we get to the stump, it's so late in the show and we're so tired, we don't feel like doing it. You guys want to do stump?
I got a stump ready to go.
Look, I got a stump queued up.
Well, hot fire. I thought you were going to go, "I want to do stump."
You dumb. Look, I got a stump.
All right, well, now it's time for stump then.
All right, son, my stump this week is Gin Forge. Or Gene Forge.
Son, oh, come on.
Are you fucking kidding
me? We talked
are
about that game on the podcast.
Me? I fucking had to write about that Gene Forge.
We talked about Spider Software on the podcast.
Oh, doo doo in your mouth.
Oh, man.
Look.
Hang your head in shame. We didn't even say what it was. You are dead. Dead.
Dude, you had that queued up to you, like, "Oh my god, they don't know Gene Forge. Oh, f-." They both know it instantly.
How many times have we talked about that game on this show? You are so dumb.
I think we actually tried to get the guy that made this game on the show once.
That's right. We even tried to get interview. God.
Look, he made a lot of games. I thought I could snake it. I guess not. I was going to make fun of you.
Son, thank you for the free stump points. That was Jake of the Week for us.
Wait, Miller, next time I ask you, do you have a stump, you better say no. Fick, please save me. Save me from this man.
I got a stump this week. It's a good stump. I like this stump. It's called Explore.
Explore? This sounds like it sounds like Black or Gun.
Is it like a sequel to Adventure?
Not quite. It's closer to what Blake Buck said.
Oh, so speaking of Adventure, they've just found the Fortran codes for Adventure. William Miller spent about 2 hours at work one day reading them codes. It's been a long time since I programmed in Fortran, but it was still pretty cool. Check it out.
Yeah, okay. I'll be sure to check out Fortran codes. What the f***? Who are you talking to? Check it out.
My penis is hard with anticipation for Fortran.
Oh, man. Fortran.
Look, even Mike knows you were destroyed, William Miller. You better just shut up till the end of this show.
All right, well, listen, son. Explore. One of our listeners is jumping up and down right now because Explore was a game made by none other than Sippin' the Swede.
What the f***?
Dude,
wait a minute.
This is Sippin'. You remember way back in the day when Sippin' the Swede was threatening to make his own game because we weren't making Tank? Sippin' the Swede made his own game. It's called Explore. So in Explore, you are an explorer and you have a camel. And you're riding through the desert, and you have to keep up your camel's health and your thirst. You have water and first aid, and you basically just explore further and further into the desert until you die. And at some point, Sippin' the Swede's face comes up and asks you logic riddles. It's awesome.
Wow.
Now, Blake Buck is remaining quiet as he digs through his pile of games. Find something I haven't asked you guys yet.
Oh. Oh, well, Mike, you got one, don't you?
Well, no, but mine, nobody's heard of mine.
Go.
Mine's, nobody's heard of it. Okay, so wait, would I describe it?
No, tell us the name, and we guess it.
Blake Buck has heard of every game ever.
Wait, I tell you the name, and then you guess what the name is? That doesn't make sense.
Well, and we describe it, because we've played it before.
Oh, okay. Okay, well then, the name of the game is Stars! Exclamation point.
Wait, we told you not to use this one because it was dumb. You already told us this game.
I said that. I said this. All I have is a dumb one.
That means you got to get another one, baby.
All right. Well, I don't know another one, baby. All right. I'll try and think of another one. I'm trying to think of now ROM things that I've done.
Stars 2, Star Harder.
Look. Your failure of a stump gave me an idea for a game that you f***ers are never going to get. And I own this game, so it's not like I looked up some bullshit and said it. I own this game. My game for you is called Scars. S-C-A-R-S.
Oh, man.
Come on. Somebody lay it on me.
you have a knife and you're cutting people.
No.
Then you leave scars on them.
This game is 100 times better than anything you could come up with.
Pancakes are also involved.
Oh, wow.
A little flippy flap down below.
What? Now let's all just stop for a minute. William Miller, what does flippy flap down below mean?
Well, I guess it's analogous to gay sex. That's what I was getting at last show. I thought it
was like a blowjob. Because it's like your mouth is flippy-flapping like in the wind or something.
I mean, I guess it could be. I'll leave it up to your imagination, but...
Well, I'm always thinking about sucking dick.
Oh! I always thought it has something to do with just like jumping on a trampoline or something because you're flippy-flapping around down below. But hey.
All right, so are you guys ready for scars?
You think blowjobs, I think trampoline. That's how our minds differ.
Are you guys ready for Scars? This game is awesome. This is an N64 racing game, and Scars was an acronym that was short for, I sh** you not, Supercomputer Animal Racing. This is where you drove around in cars that were like, they were kind of like, I guess exactly what it says. They're kind of like computer cars, but they were shaped like animals. So one of them was like a shark. One of them was like a bear. There were all these different animals you could be, and you raced around and you shot each other.
Dude, I get to be the mongoose.
So it was incredibly stupid. Look it up. Scars Supercomputer Animal Racing.
Dude, you know what that just reminded me of? Do you guys remember Battle Beasts?
Battle Beasts.
Oh, this might have been before your time. I keep forgetting I have a couple years on you children. Battle Beast was like Mega Man with action figures. Like, you had your beasts, and each beast had an element, and you had to, like, rub his little hologram on his chest, and, like, the heat caused, like, the little fireball to appear, and that means he's fire. Oh, man, Battle Beasts were awesome.
That reminds me of Treasure Trolls. Blake Buck loved Treasure Trolls, partly because when I was a child, I was a homosexual. I had a giant collection of Treasure Trolls. I was also into musical theater. Come on along and listen to the Lullaby of Broadway, the Hip Hooray and Ballyhoo, the Lullaby of Broadway.
So he's not gay anymore.
And now it's time for the outro. All right. That does it for this week of the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that?
Too soon.
Now some show, too Blake soon. Buck.
Too soon.
It's too soon.
That's the quote, too soon. If you'd like to leave us any feedback, it's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com or call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9.
Also, we're always looking for people to write content for the site, so if you enjoy writing and you enjoy games, hit us up at feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Also, you can, I guess, call our listener line 845-BATTLE-9, but writing samples would be appreciated, so feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com.
Also, guys, I think there was some confusion about Battle last week. We got a few emails. To sign up for Battle, you can either leave us your telephone number by emailing it to feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com, leave us your telephone number, your email, and preferably your time zone. And also, you can just call into 84BATTLE9 and say all that information on the answering machine. Some people were confused that you had to have Skype in order to Battle. You can use any landline phone or any cell phone, any kind of phone, to call 845-BATTLE9 and we will call you on the number you leave us. So if you leave us your cell phone number, we'll call you on your cell phone. You don't have to do it through Skype at all. All
right, now here's what you don't do when you write us in on Battle. You don't do what Wazoo does and says and writes in and says, please note that I'm a minor, can't drink or drive, and have a dollar amount of about $100. We don't care.
Yeah, really.
Well, look.
Really, we are not going to give anyone.
We do need to know if you have access to a car.
No, we don't. Look.
No, just get your mom to drive you.
Look. They enter Battle knowing that we could ask them anything. All right. Having a car is advantageous, but if you don't, you better get creative fast.
Because keep in mind, our first three battles all began with the line, "Go to blank and get blank and do blank with it."
It's like a fetch quest, sort of. The first three, at least.
Also, if you'd like to donate to us, you can send your donations to donate at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Do that through PayPal. There are links on the site to do that and in the show notes as well. And also, guys, vote for us at Podcast Alley this month, September. Brand new month. I want to be in number one spot. Me, Blake Buck.
And William we all know what happens when that happens. Look, we know.
I know we can do it. So, vote for us this month.
The pants go down and the butter comes out.
Oh, God. Oh, that's what my first rape victim said. Also, we'd like to thank Lucas for editing our podcast week after week and providing us with the colorful songs at the end. So, thanks, Lucas. Anna, we got anything else, guys?
I don't think so. Thanks, Mike, for being on the show. Check out his game, Jazz Cubed, at silverwaregames.com. Head over there and buy that game.
Yes, do.
You really sold it.
It was fun being on the show. But definitely do that. Go straight to that site and buy that instantly.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. And so from all of us here at Best Damn Podcast...
It prints money, actually, that game.
With an animated GIF.
That's your next battle challenge. Buy everything we have to sell.
Send money to us. Battle, go.
All right, so from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm William Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
I'm Mike Silverman.
And we will see you next time.
Hey, Dad.
Calix, this is the Best Damn Podcast. Oh, he hung up.
Oh. Oh. He ran. He fled from battle.
That was priceless. That was priceless. All right.
You do not flee from battle.
All right. Done with Calix. I love what he said right when he said, Dad.
That was priceless.
Please leave the message for
Kamur.
Record your message after the tone. To send a numeric page, press 5.
He fails. Fail.